This is Central Time, and right now it's our weekly state news roundup. Every Friday, we look back at the top Wisconsin news from the past week with Robert Menser of the USA Today Network, Wisconsin.
Yesterday was a day of action in Madison for youth mental health. Governor Walker spoke about what he included in his budget proposal to advance youth mental health services here in the state.
Robert Menser is a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, based in Wausau, and he's back with us now to round up the top state news from the past week. And Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
Well, Rob, what happened in yesterday's day of action in Madison?
Yeah, so this event was the culmination of a big project that I've been involved with, and many of my colleagues in USA Today Network Wisconsin have been involved with. Basically, this started out of reporting on the issue of teen suicide and the fact that rates of teen suicide are considerably higher in Wisconsin than the national average, about one-third higher. Behind that, just that statistic, of course, there are hundreds of stories of families who lost a son or a daughter, stories about all the factors that all together contribute to this problem. Of youth mental health sort of writ large. So our organization launched a series called Kids in Crisis that looked at youth mental health. And we've done this for 2 years now, had a series of stories on this theme from all over the state and involving about two dozen journalists in all. I should say the driving force is the Jim Fitzhenry, who's an editor on the project, and Rory Linane, the lead reporter on the series. And so we've looked at this issue all over, and one of the things that was important to USA Today Network was not just to sort of diagnose the problem, but to look at ways of addressing it. And so, this day of action event was sort of a piece with that. We got together with a lot of advocates, parents who had been affected by this issue, professionals who work in youth mental health, and Governor Scott Walker, who attended, spoke at the event to speak about some parts of his budget that you know, if I may say, that come directly from the reporting that was done in Kids in Crisis.
And in particular, what did he mention, Rob?
Well, so he and State Superintendent Tony Evers both have responded to our findings that that in particular services in schools in Wisconsin lag behind other states. So specifically in this budget, there is proposed a $6 million boost for school-based mental health programs, $3 million for the state to hire more social workers, $2.5 million in grants for school-based mental health clinics. So the idea is, kids spend a lot of their time in schools. It may be difficult for kids to come to their parents or somebody, in their family with their problems. But if they have access to mental health professionals in schools, they may be able to find interventions sooner.
And, Rob, let's move on to our next story. A Milwaukee County jail inmate died in the past year after 7 days without water. And on Monday, an inquest jury released its advisory verdict that criminal charges be filed in that case. How much weight does that decision have?
Well, so it is an advisory charge. The Milwaukee County District Attorney will decide whether or not to go forward with the charges. An inquest is not a trial, but it did allow prosecutors to question witnesses under oath before a jury and have the jury weigh in. Maybe this is obvious, but it looks like a way of navigating what could be difficult internal politics, because it does amount to one part of the Milwaukee County justice system investigating or taking action against another. So in essence, even though it is the DA's decision, he now has the jury's recommendation to sort of bolster his case if he does ultimately decide to bring charges against these seven individuals.
And Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee County has taken some heat in the past over deaths that have happened in the Milwaukee County jail during that time. Did his name come up? Was he mentioned at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Sheriff Clark is the, you know, is the official who is in charge of the jail. He has said very little about this, death. This is one of four deaths in the jail. Last week he emailed a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter and wrote, are you that stupid to think that he would comment while the inquest was going on? But of course now the inquest is not going on and he still did not comment. So he is said to be up for a bureaucratic position in President Donald Trump's Homeland Security Department. But in the meantime, there is a lot to be done at the Milwaukee County Jail.
And so, Rob, it sounds like Milwaukee County DA John Chisholm could file a number of charges. He could file no charges at all. So what do you expect to happen next?
Well, you know, I don't. It's hard for me to say, and I try not to be in the predictions business too much. But I do think that with the number of details that came out in the course of this inquest that are made public, that Terrell Thomas's water was cut off for 7 days, and he never left his cell in that time. And in just sort of the amount of scrutiny that has been on this case, it feels to me like it would be it would cause a scandal if there were no charges. But of course, there is room within the law to debate exactly who should be charged, exactly what charges will end up. And that's, I feel like that's a bit above my pay grade.
We'll leave it there for now and pick up our conversation in a bit as we talk to Rob Venser now from USA Today Network Wisconsin, checking out the latest in state news.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're continuing our conversation now with Rob Venser from the USA Today Network Wisconsin about the week's top news. And Rob, Wisconsin had a pretty high-profile visitor recently when Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg visited, and he was here eating cheese curds, having brats, milking cows. What was behind this visit?
Oh, man. Do you think he's running for president?
Right? I don't know. What do you think?
President Donald Trump, succeeded by President Mark Zuckerberg. This is a weird timeline we're on, Veronica. The Facebook CEO has been traveling to swing states suspiciously, but I guess he has his reasons. He was in, Akron, Ohio, or Youngstown, Ohio, or something. And on Sunday, he showed up in Wisconsin. He went to a family farm in Blanchardville, southwest of Madison. He ate a brat in Madison, and he made a Facebook post about it. He talked a little bit about sort of what it is to run a small dairy farm, a 30-cow dairy farm like the one he was on, and it's the sort of thing that is if we live in Wisconsin, we maybe know that these farmers milk their cows every day, all year long at 5 a.m. But it just showed, he was shining his considerable spotlight, his 89 million Facebook followers, on the life of a Wisconsin dairy farmer, and I think that's nice. I like that. That's okay.
I guess he's already visited more often. This is not a political dig, but then Hillary Clinton visited during the campaign. So it's interesting if you want evidence for maybe a potential presidential campaign. It's interesting to see what happens there. So we'll watch and see if he comes back.
Where are his emails? Are they on a private server? Or I don't know this yet.
I guess that remains. You'll have to uncover that.
Wait for the Comey letter.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting story there. Pictures up of Zuckerberg eating cheese curds and brats. So we'll see what happens. And moving on, so other big news this week, and that's been a big news cycle. Wisconsin, as you know, Rob, the worst in the nation when it comes to the student achievement gap between white and non-white students. And on Wednesday, lawmakers questioned state education department officials about their goal of cutting this gap in half over the next 6 years. What did they ask, and what did lawmakers, and what was the response there?
Sure. So the educational achievement gap is absolutely one of Wisconsin's largest struggles. It is a topic that has been batted around by policymakers for years, and it is persistent, and it's a serious problem. So the Department of Public Instruction has made it a priority and has introduced several sort of types of programs and initiatives to try to address it. And one thing that that the state needs to do under federal education law is prepare this sort of school accountability plan. It's meant to design, you know, create incentives to schools so that they will make the necessary changes and sort of set these benchmarks. What happened was, you know, among those who questioned these benchmarks, among Democratic lawmakers who ask whether it's possible to make progress, well, the question is whether it's possible to make progress without changing structurally the way that schools are funded, which, of course, is something that no one thinks the state legislature is really going to make make dramatic changes to. And there's a point here. The state funds schools through property taxes, and since there is a massive sort of income inequality between rich areas and poor areas, it creates an imbalance between, you know, wealthy suburban schools and urban schools, which may have more non-white students. So, you know, that is one argument. There's another argument that is the state needs to set ambitious goals and sort of create consequences and accountability in order to make anything change or to have a yardstick by which it will measure whether it's making progress on the achievement gap.
And so has the DPI said more on that about how achievable they think this plan is and what they intend to do going forward?
So, the DPI is in a position here. One thing that that the official in this particular questioning on a legislative hearing said was that it's important to have ambitious goals, which does sound a bit like you could read into that it's a question whether those goals are achievable, that it's important to set ambitious goals and then what. But of course the then what has been a persistent problem in education policy. You know, No Child Left Behind set up fairly extreme accountability measures that would kick in for schools that didn't hit certain achievement goals. And then when it was time for those measures to kick in, they were extremely politically unpopular, and the great majority of them never did take effect. So it's the state is sort of stuck between needing to make improvements, but you know, it's hard to there's no stick to by which to make them stick.
And we leave it there. We'll talk to you next week, Rob. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was Rob Menser, storytelling editor with USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. And he's with us every Friday to round up the week's top state news.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farag.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. First, you know the feeling. You're approaching an intersection with a four-way stop sign and you see other cars all getting there at the same time, too. Well, what are you going to do? Will law and order be followed, or will the often chaotic gray area of that stop sign etiquette play out?
Our next guest wants to know who you are going to be in this situation. He's laid out some of the personality profiles of Wisconsin drivers at the four-way stop. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. Are you sometimes baffled by that four-way stop, or are you baffled by the behavior of others when you come to that intersection? Join in at 800-642-1234. Mike Paulus joins us now. He's the online editor at Volume 1. His latest article, we have this linked on our Facebook page, spells out the different personality types you might encounter at a four-way stop. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me to, you know, talk about these extremely important issues.
Well, it's one of those things everybody has encountered, everybody who's driven, I should say, at one point or another in their lives. What sparked your interest in trying to suss out why we do what we do at four-way stops?
Well, I was inspired to write this after driving around Eau Claire for the better part of 15 years with my wife and listening to her get kind of vocal about the different people we meet at the four-way stops around Eau Claire.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, do we stick to a type, you think, or do we change depending on the mood that we're in?
Well, I suppose it kind of depends on how your day went, but I think you probably have, if you're the kind of person who falls into certain routines in your daily life, you'll probably fit one of these four-way stop profiles every time you pull up to one.
And this is one of those, I mean, it's weird because there's some ambiguity. I mean, I think people kind of know the rule of the road, but there's situations where, oh, did I get there a second ahead of that person, a second behind that person? This is a situation that it, unless we're really observant, it's not always cut and dried.
Well, looking at the reaction that we got from this online at volume1.org and on our Facebook page, most people reacting to this don't think there's any ambiguity at all. And they're pretty annoyed at their fellow drivers for not knowing exactly what to do and when.
Okay, Mike, you got to walk us through. What's the first type?
Well, the first type of person is probably the most common type of person who just can't figure out a four-way stop, and I call them the no-you-goer. Because they embody the phrase, no, you go, when they come up to a stop sign. And I think they're a product of kind of a Midwestern upbringing. They're very polite, and so they defer their turn to someone else. They might wave at you. They might mouth the words, no, you go, or give you a come-hither gesture, perhaps. Unfortunately, even though their heart's in the right place, they put everyone else in the awkward situation of having to cut in line and take a turn and be impolite. And for people who know the rules and know when their turn is, being told to go or offered to go when they're not supposed to is just confusing and infuriating.
And in your piece, you point toward this clip from the show Portlandia, the no you goer.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Then you go.
No, you first.
Then you go.
I'm going to go after you.
Hit the road, Jack.
No, you go.
Then you go.
No, you go.
Then you go.
No, you go.
No, you go.
I'm not going until you go.
No, you go.
I'm not going to go until you go.
No, you go.
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 Well, that show's set in Portland, but it maybe highlights the aggressive politeness of the Midwesterner, Mike.
I think the problem we have, at least around Eau Claire, is that people aren't literally talking to each other that way, so you're kind of left guessing why the other person wants you to go first. I also think, besides just being polite, I think some people are a no-you-goer because they just don't want the responsibility of knowing when to go, and so they just rather wait till the intersection's clear before they decide to cross it.
I will cop to that one, because sometimes I'm not sure, and I've been slightly thinking about something else, and I get there, so you might as well be polite and let the other person go first, because maybe it's their turn. I'm not really sure.
Well, yeah. I can understand
Mike
that,
will never like me again after I just admitted that. I could tell in your voice you were done with me
judgment.
Right when that happened.
Well, and then there's the opposite extreme, the person, the me-go person who they got to go first.
Yeah, I guess I would call that the driver who ain't got time for this. I like to see this person as somebody they have places to go and people to see, and if you're going to come to a complete stop and the way the law says you're supposed to, then that's your problem, because they've got places to go and people to see. So they'll just kind of start rolling through the stop sign, and then I would assume that in their head they're in the Matrix and the world has slowed down around them, and they're able to move like a bullet through the intersection, diving into the open spaces until they get all the way through and just kind of rattle off, leaving everyone behind them extremely annoyed. And I assume, I've never talked to somebody who I've seen do this, but I can only assume that they believe everyone behind them is just in awe and very impressed at their bold maneuvering, but really we just hope they rear-end a cop.
And that one's kind of dangerous. There's another type that I guess is also dangerous in its own way. It's the one you sort of are testing the waters.
Yeah, the tester of the waters.
Yeah.
Well, the tester of the waters, in lieu of actually paying attention to the cars and knowing when it's their turn, they'll get up there, see nobody's moving, and then they'll just hesitantly nudge out into the intersection just to kind of see what happens, and kind of play it by ear. Unfortunately, what this usually does is it triggers this weird kind of infinite loop where another driver will start to move as well, and so the first driver will stop. The tester of the waters will stop, and then the other car stops. So the first car starts, and then the second car starts, and then the first car stops, and the second car stops. And they entered this kind of time warp where they both perpetually start and stop without ever actually getting across the intersection throughout the entirety of space and time. And the rest of us just have to sit there and watch while our ice cream gets squishy.
And now the last type that offends you, I will say I did in my earlier days of driving, maybe it's because I didn't know any better, or maybe it's because I was fresh out of driving school and knew everything, the person who directs. So you're there. All right, I know that person we tied, but they're on the right. I know it's their turn to go first. I'm going to point them over. I'm going to point and direct. I don't do this anymore. I'm going to say that right now. It's been a long time. But in my teens, I was the four-way stop director.
The Mr. Director. Yes, I would call this the worst four-way stopper in all the land.
I was young. I was foolish.
See, and you thought I was bad, Mike.
Well, I'm not talking about you maybe specifically, but this person is usually kind of condescending, and they're kind of a take-charge kind of person, and they know that four-way stops are a tricky situation, like you did. So they pull up, and they're ready to be the king of the intersection. So you don't have to actually do any thinking at all, because they will direct you, usually with a curt little two-finger wave pointing you in the direction you're supposed to go, as if you didn't know. It's especially bad if it's not actually your turn to go, and they're telling you that it's your turn to go, and there's no reason to thank this person. They do it all throughout the kindness of their hearts, and I just really hope they drive into a ditch someday.
Mike, is that person usually a guy, maybe with long blonde hair?
Hey,
or
whoa.
Have you?
I have very short blonde hair.
I'm sorry,
at that
I didn't
point.
Mean to say that part out loud. Or is it sometimes a woman who's doing the directing?
I honestly have only ever seen men do this in Eau Claire. I'm sure anybody can be a director at the intersection, but I've only experienced the male of the species doing this.
And those are the four types who get it wrong. There's a magical fifth type, Mike.
The payer of attention. Yes. This is the person who pulls up to the four-way stop, paying attention to all the other motorists. They probably knew a four-way stop was coming before they even got up to it. And they know when they should go, and they take their turn with confidence. And they are just a unicorn driving around on wheels of pure sunlight, as far as I'm concerned. And I think they should have their vehicle registration fees waived for all eternity.
But given that it almost never works out like that, where you get to a four-way stop and everyone is that magical unicorn, do you think that maybe just four-way stops don't work and we should have stoplights or we should have roundabouts?
Well, I would prefer the roundabout, personally. although roundabouts, I could write a whole other thing just about roundabouts and how I know people like my parents who grew up in Wisconsin don't understand and despise them. But I would prefer a roundabout myself, yeah.
And, Mike, you write that everybody thinks that their locality is the worst at four-way stops, but you know better. You know it's Eau Claire.
Yes. I'm sure anywhere you live, if you're a frustrated driver, you assume the drivers in your city are the worst at something like four-way stops. But I can just say with absolutely no scientific proof or data to back it up that Eau Claire is the worst.
So what advice do you have for those of us who want to be better? We want to be the magical driving on sunlight person. What do you suggest when we get there legally and just getting into the right mental frame of mind?
Well, just be an alert driver, and when you're driving up to a four-way stop, you should know it's a four-way stop before you get there, and you should be paying attention to the other drivers, a while before you actually come to your stop. If it's a busy one and there's cars in front of you, you have to wait for it. It's actually pretty easy because there's already some starting and stopping going on. So you should be able to survey the situation before you have to, get up there and take your turn.
Mike, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
No problem. Thanks so much.
That's Mike Paulus, online editor at Volume 1. We've been talking about the four-way stop in legal theory and in real-world practice. We have his article linked on the Central Time Facebook page, and while you're there, let us know if there's a particular kind of four-way stop driver that bugs you. Own up if you fit one of the four-way stop malefactors he talked about there. And let us know if you think your community is the worst at this or any other form of driving. Again, that's on the Central Time Facebook page.
So, Rob, you are no longer a director.
What are
you now?
I just try to get it right. I don't do the inch out unless somebody else foils me by inching out. I think, oh, are they going to go? Because the laws of physics will outweigh the laws of the land if I pull out and they pull out at the same time.
Right. But, and I will say in my own defense that I'm usually a payer of attention.
Right. I think so. Well, we all think we're above average drivers. We're all Lake Wobegon drivers,
we are.
If you will.
We're from Wisconsin.
Exactly.